My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent. What is up, guys? Welcome to episode 39 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back against the culture of groupthink and challenge the narrative. I hope you're doing well. And I just want to say thank you again for supporting me and my work. For those of you who have bought my book, Raising Victims, and have sent donations for supporting the podcast and my Substack, and just for listening, just tuning in and sharing stuff on social media, sending words of encouragement, etc. It does not go unnoticed. I really appreciate it. I'm not always the greatest at responding to emails and messages, but I see them and I'm grateful for them. So thank you. All right, so this week we're going to talk a little bit about Jack Phillips, who's back in court again for being a mean old bigot who won't bake cakes and say things that he doesn't believe in. How dare this man? Come on, leave him alone. But I want to talk about the implications a little bit and the philosophy underpinning this because it's important. Should people be forced to participate in something they don't believe in? Or what about discrimination in general? Should a business be allowed to discriminate on any basis whatsoever? Now, I'm a free market guy, so I bet you already can guess what direction I'm going to go in. But I also want to talk about what's been going on with Matt Walsh and Dylan Mulvaney, who is a man pretending to be a woman, and the fact that a lot of conservatives are not happy with what Matt said about it. So we'll get into that. And our psychological concept of the week is false consensus bias. So we'll talk about what that is. And in our culture segment, I want to talk about another game that's coming out, which is from one of my all-time favorite series, Zelda. And this is a sequel to Breath in the Wild called Tears of the Kingdom. Ocarina of Time is still the GOAT, but we'll see. All right, let's get into it. Narrative number one, Jack Phillips does not have the right to refuse to bake LGBT cakes. All right. So Jack Phillips, if you remember, is the cake shop owner from Colorado who was sued for refusing to bake a cake with LGBT messaging on it or for an LGBT wedding or whatever it was. I mean, he's been sued so many times at this point, it's hard to keep track. But he's become a target for activists who know that he's going to refuse, so they explicitly go to his shop and request cakes that they know he's not going to make. He's not going to do it. And when he refuses, they sue him. And it's become this massive bullying campaign where these LGBT activists are attempting to bully Phillips into submission. And to his credit, he's not backing down. But my goodness, come on. So this latest iteration of this madness comes from a request to bake a pink cake with blue frosting to celebrate a gender transition. And the court ruled on the side of the activist named Autumn Scardina. I don't know his real name, but I doubt that it's Autumn. And ordered Phillips to pay him $500. $500 for what? I mean, that's insane already. Like, what are we doing? Phillips appealed the ruling and the Colorado Appeals Court said no and affirmed the court decision. They said, quote, turning to the constitutional issues presented, the division concludes that the act of baking a pink cake with blue frosting does not constitute protected speech under the First Amendment. End quote. The argument was that it was a nondescript cake that could be used for anything, and therefore, it did not violate any religious beliefs to bake the cake. Hey, this argument is stupid. The whole thing is stupid. I'm guessing this Autumn had absolutely no intention whatsoever of purchasing a cake from this cake shop. That seems obvious. And only intended to try to find a way to further bring chaos and mayhem into the world. And he did a fantastic job at that. And I looked it up. This person is a lawyer who works at a personal injury and divorce law firm in Denver. Yeah, that's fitting. So There's no way that this person had any desire whatsoever to get a cake from this cake shop and was only trying to stir up trouble. That's exactly what's happening. I mean, these people are psychopaths. They're psychopaths. And it's appalling that our court system is supporting them and incentivizing them to continue behaving this way and punishing Jack Phillips over and over again. It's incredible. But yeah, it's true that the cake could be used for anything. That much is true. But the second that this person told them what it was going to be used for, made it a personal issue. And now that business has to decide whether they're going to participate in that or not. If you sell guns and someone tells you that they're going to use it to rob someone's house, you shouldn't have to sell them a gun. And you might say, well, robbery is illegal. That's different. No, it's not. It doesn't matter. You're refusing to participate in whatever they have planned. It doesn't matter what it is. If you know what they're going to do and you sell it to them, then that makes you an accomplice. You're now a participant in the action because you know what they're doing. You know what they're going to use it for, and you sell it to them anyway. That they have now involved you in the act. You're part of it, and there's no getting around it. If you don't like the previous example because of legality, how about suicide? How about someone tells you that they're going to take the gun and shoot themselves? Then they sue you because you refuse to sell it to them. It's incredible. And if you think that's too strong, let's just flip the case we have. Let's say you're a transgender cake shop owner. Let's say Autumn, or whatever his name is, owns a cake shop. And someone comes in and says they want a pink cake with blue icing. And Autumn says, great, I'll do it. But then they say, awesome, this is for my Men Are Not Women dance party and transgender people have gender dysphoria spectaculathon. How's that strike you? See, the argument's dumb. And I can't believe that our courts have no ability to apply logic and reason to these scenarios. Well, actually, I can believe it. Because it's not surprising that these activists are everywhere, including our court system. Ain't zero chance they force a transgender person to bake a cake for someone who outwardly expresses their opposition to transgenderism. There's zero chance that happens. But yet, when a Christian refuses to bake a cake for someone who outwardly expresses their opposition to Christianity and, well, reality in general, then it's, well, it's just a cake. Why not? Just a cake, man. Forced participation. Forced capitulation. Bow down to the gods of progressivism. You're not allowed to say no. You're not allowed to push back. You're not allowed to refuse. Pledge fealty to the ideology or else. It's madness. But let's take this further. So we're dealing with supposed anti-discrimination laws that only protect whoever the anointed deemed to be worthy of protecting. You can discriminate against conservatives all day long and no one will say boo. But it makes me think, because I mentioned earlier, I'm a free market guy who believes that the government should be involved in the market as least as possible. So the question is, do we even need anti-discrimination laws at all? Do we need them? Are they constitutional? Do they violate the rights of business owners? These questions, to me, are extremely important questions that just get glossed over in favor of the emotional, we don't like discrimination, it's not fair. Okay, I get it. I understand that. But that's not the question. Vivek Ramaswamy, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he's running for president as a Republican, I assume, challenging Trump and Nikki Haley and whoever else is insane enough to throw their hat into that ring. But he had a video of him speaking at a Turning Point event where he said that if you can't fire someone for being black or gay or Muslim or Hindu or Jewish or whatever, then you shouldn't be able to fire someone for being an outspoken conservative either. Here he is.
You know what I say is if you can't discriminate against somebody, fire somebody, or deplatform somebody on account of race or sex or sexual orientation or religion or national origin, then you should not be able to discriminate against somebody on account of their political beliefs either. We need to make political expression a civil right in this country, right up there next to the other protected classes.
Make political expression a civil right in America. I mean, okay. That makes sense on the surface if we're going to play by these rules. But the question to me should be, should businesses be banned from hiring or firing people for any of those reasons? Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think business owners should fire people for stupid reasons like this, clearly. I think it's wrong. It's immoral. I don't think it should happen. But why shouldn't they have the right to do it? Like we talked about last episode, the market is a far more effective regulator than any government agency, and the market is not kind to discrimination. A company that discriminates on arbitrary criteria will be at an inherent disadvantage because they'll lose higher quality candidates. This is logical. Arbitrary discrimination is going to make your group inherently weaker. And you think about it. If you're hiring the best candidates, then there's no need for an arbitrary filter. The best candidates are getting the job anyway. The arbitrary filter is saying that you're rejecting the best candidates who don't fit the arbitrary criteria in favor of weaker candidates that do. And the market will punish you because your competitors will take the better candidates. The only way you can escape those market forces is if the government protects you, like what happened during Jim Crow. A lot of times people look at Jim Crow and they say, see, this is what happens when the market is allowed to discriminate. But that's not true. It's what happens when the government protects businesses that discriminate. When the government protects businesses from market forces, then businesses have freedom to discriminate because they're free from any costs that are associated with that. But even during Jim Crow, companies were defying the law and hiring black workers or renting housing to black people or integrating trains or whatever it may have been because it was economically advantageous to do so. The market doesn't care. I always like to use the example of basketball and how all white teams eventually had to integrate whether they actually wanted to or not. Their attitudes did not matter because if they hadn't, they would have no longer been as competitive as the integrated teams because of the same reasons. You forego weaker candidates in favor of candidates who fit arbitrary criteria. It makes your team weaker. And look, I know people have a visceral reaction to unfair discrimination or even perceived unfair discrimination. But liberty is far more important than feelings. Even hurt feelings. In a free market, people can complain, they can boycott, they can take their business elsewhere. And companies that don't meet the expectations of their customers lose those customers to competitors. If a company discriminates against you, you can take your business to a company that doesn't. The market will reward companies for good behavior and punish them for poor behavior. And I know we talked about this last episode, but it's worth reiterating. To quote Milton Friedman again, the great virtue of a free market system is that it does not care what color people are. It does not care what their religion is. It only cares whether they can produce something you want to buy. It is the most effective system we have discovered to enable people who hate one another to deal with one another and help one another. I would also add that it doesn't care what gender people are, what sexuality people are. Milton Friedman also said, underlying most arguments against the free market is a lack of belief in freedom itself. And that is the issue. That's the key point. A lack of belief in freedom. People are terrified of liberty and the prospect of others using their liberty to do things that they don't like. Even though that's the very definition of liberty. It's not liberty if everyone does what you want them to do. Liberty is exactly that idea that people are free to do things that you would prefer they not do. That means you are free to do things that others would prefer you not do. As long as you aren't violating the rights of others, that is the right to be free from coercion, then you should be free to do whatever you want to do. Your right to swing your fist ends where my nose begins, as the saying goes. But the problems people have with liberty, or they claim to have with liberty, are actually problems with government. When the market's not able to operate freely because of government intervention, then you get distortions in the market. And then you get companies that are able to discriminate against people based on political ideology and pay no cost for it because of the government. So the freer the market, the better. The less government, the better. Let the market do its thing. As far as Jack Phillips, Jack should be free to do whatever the heck he wants to do with his cake shop. He should be free to make or not make whatever kind of cakes he wants to, without the government compelling him either way. The government has no business being involved in any of this. No one's rights were violated, at least not real rights. The idea that you have some kind of right to be served a cake at a cake shop is outrageous, let alone a right to have a special cake made to commemorate your mental illness and ideological possession. Bullying the owner of a cake shop to bend the knee to your twisted ideology makes you the villain of the story, not the hero. Leave the man alone. I'll leave this here with one last Milton Friedman quote. It's a Milton Friedman kind of day. A society that puts equality ahead of freedom will get neither freedom nor equality. But a society that puts freedom before equality will get a high degree of both. Narrative number two. Matt Walsh was way too harsh on Dylan Mulvaney. So, there were quite a few conservatives who went after Matt Walsh for the way he handled Dylan Mulvaney, who is a man who believes he is a woman. And if you haven't heard it, I'll play the video by Mulvaney first and then play Matt's response. But here's the video he was responding to.
It's day 335 of being a girl, and I wanted to go on record to say that this might be the hottest I've ever looked and will ever look in my lifetime. And I'm making this video so that in thousands of years, there will be evidence. Is it the dress? It could be the dress. Is it the makeup? Or is it the hair? Because I think it's the extensions. And when I have extensions in, I don't know my name. I don't know where I live. I just know that I love these. And I know that I look like I could steal a husband, but I want to promise you, look me in the eyes. I want to promise you that I would never do that to you. Okay, I am a girl's girl. And I love ya. Woo! But seriously, this is good, right? Okay. Love you. Okay.
Clearly deranged. Anyway, here's Matt's monologue about it, which made a lot of people upset.
Now listen, I know I don't have a reputation for being necessarily the kindest or gentlest person in the world, especially when dealing with people like this. The truth, though, is that I am a gentle soul at heart, I think. And also, I do feel pity, or I can feel pity, for some of these people. And so I wouldn't usually say what I'm about to say, at least not as directly as I'm going to say it. But Dylan Mulvaney is intentionally degrading women every time he does this woman face minstrel show routine. He is insulting and demeaning them and doing it on purpose and profiting off of it. And he doesn't care. And since I have two daughters and a wife, I take this kind of thing personally, which is why I have to say to Dylan, if that is the most attractive you will ever look, then I don't even want to imagine what you'll look like when you're at your ugliest. You do not pass as an attractive woman or as a woman at all, even with 50 pounds of makeup and plastic surgery and clever lighting tricks. Even then, you still cannot escape what you really are and what you will always be. You have successfully shed whatever parts of you were masculine, perhaps, at least on the surface. Nobody would ever describe you as masculine or manly, so you've got that going. But your femininity quotient has not increased at a rate commensurate with the loss of your masculinity. You may not be masculine, but you also aren't feminine. Instead, you are You are weird and artificial. You are manufactured and lifeless. You are unearthly and eerie. You are like some kind of human deepfake. That's what you are. You are a man deprived of all the best qualities of men, but without any of the best qualities of women. Even your personality is contrived. Everything about you is fake. Nothing about you rings true. Nobody buys the act. You'll never be accepted as a woman by anyone. Never by anyone. Even the people who pretend to accept you as a woman are only pretending because they're afraid of being lectured if they don't, or because they want to use you as a platform to virtue signal. But everyone who looks at you will see something pitiable and bizarre, something utterly unfeminine in every way. You will never be able to actually have the identity that you're trying to appropriate, nor will you ever be able to fully escape the identity that you're fleeing. The best you can hope for is some kind of limbo, the worst of all worlds. And yet, even in that limbo state, you will still be a man. Just not one that any of us can respect or take seriously. But other than that, champ, you're doing great.
Okay, so like I said, many people were upset with Matt for this, saying essentially that we can fight against the transgender stuff without being cruel. But I don't know, man. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I don't see it as cruel. I see it as harsh truth. And sometimes the truth is harsh, but it needs to be spoken anyway. And you know, this was specifically aimed at Mulvaney, a person who put this video out there in order to garner reactions. So it wasn't like Matt went out looking for some random transgender person minding their own business, right? And listen, this transgender stuff is really dark. And there are a lot of evil things going on because of it, like kids having their body parts mutilated or being put on hormones or whatever it may be. And Matt has been at the forefront of exposing a lot of this stuff going on as well, like exposing Vanderbilt for performing gender surgeries on minors, for example. So in my mind, at least, when you have somebody like Dylan Mulvaney, who's propagating this false reality, and like Matt said, profiting off of it, it needs to be met head on and met with unapologetic forcefulness that no, this is not true, and we will not participate in this delusion. Let's all stop pretending that there's any kind of legitimacy to any of this nonsense and tell the truth. Dylan Mulvaney is not a woman and never will be a woman, let alone an attractive woman. It would be one thing if Dylan was just living his life and minding his own business. It would be weird, but whatever. Live and let live, yes? But that's not what's happening. Dylan is an influencer. Dylan is attempting to normalize this garbage and attempting to influence others to believe it's perfectly fine and acceptable, and to make a mockery of women and womanhood and promoting the idea of getting surgery to make yourself look like more of a woman. So unapologetic truth is required. Tiptoeing around the truth and being worried about hurting feelings is exactly what got us in this mess in the first place. Now, that doesn't mean seeking out random people to try to make them feel bad, but if some dude is going to make a video asserting that he is an attractive woman capable of stealing other women's husbands, then people should not be afraid to say, you know what? I don't think so, buddy. Because we live in reality, and we shouldn't have to entertain delusions to make people feel better or to avoid offending them. In fact, I insist that we refuse to do that. Tell the truth, always. So, this doesn't end here. To Matt's credit, he did not back down, even with the conservative backlash. But he doubled down and said, look, these people are trying to turn my kids into Dylan Mulvaney, and I'm not having it. Listen.
I have personally heard from many parents, more than I can count, who tell me versions of the same horror story. A beautiful and innocent kid one day, seemingly out of nowhere, gets sucked into the gender cult and is devoured by it. The child they held as a baby and raised and gave their lives to and loved and still love becomes suddenly unrecognizable. All of their innocence and light and beauty just drained out of them, replaced by this self-cannibalizing madness. For a parent, to see this happen to a child, it is a fate worse than death. I would rather be dead than have that happen to my kids. See, the thing that I most despise about Dylan Mulvaney is that he is part of a movement which actively seeks to turn my children into Dylan Mulvaney. That's why I'm entitled to my anger and to whatever language I use to convey it. I will say whatever I want to say, and I will be justified in saying it because these people are after my kids and yours and everyone else's. And you're worried that I'm being a little rude? Well, you see, when it comes to my children, the children that I cherish more than my own life, if you think mean words go too far, then you would be very shocked to hear how far I would really go to protect them. Trust me, words are the least of it.
That's it. They are after our kids. That's why it matters. That's why we can't be afraid to speak the truth. Of course, many on the left were grasping their pearls and collapsing on their fainting couches after this one. This account on Twitter, Ari Drennan, who apparently works for Media Matters, and is apparently also a man pretending to be a woman, shared the video and said, quote, "In another unhinged rant about Dylan Mulvaney, Matt Walsh says that he would rather die than allow his kids to be trans. Matt says he's entitled to whatever language he wants, as am I. His six kids are not safe with him, and he should not be allowed within a mile of them." End quote. Incredible. Pretty much validates exactly what Matt is saying and why. He says he'll do anything to protect his children from these people because they want to warp their minds and take them away from him. And the very people he's talking about come out and say, you know what? We need to get these kids away from him. We're not after your kids, but since we're on the subject, we should separate you from your children so we raise them properly since you don't subscribe to our religion. You're unfit to be a parent. Yeesh. My friend Joel Berry with the Babylon Bee had this to say. So far, Matt Walsh's rhetoric hasn't even matched Jesus' extreme language about tying millstones around people's necks and tossing them in the sea. Accurate. Jesus was not shy about what would happen to people who led children astray. Not shy about it at all. Sometimes the truth sounds harsh. It sounds cruel to people who hate the truth. It sounds uncomfortable to people who want to coddle those who hate the truth. And yes, I understand. There is the saying that you catch more flies with honey than vinegar. And there is merit to that. We want to speak the truth in love and we don't want to actually be hateful. I agree with that. But calling a spade is not hateful. Responding to a video that is meant to normalize this madness and saying, no, everything you just said, the exact opposite is true, and I will defend reality for the sake of my children, is not hateful. And again, had he just sought some random person out on the street minding their own business to berate, then fine. But that's not what this was. Listen, our country is sick. And it's attempting to perpetuate the illness indefinitely by infusing the virus into the minds and bodies of children. And the way our society in general treats children is appalling. We dehumanize them and kill them in the womb. If we allow them to live, we encourage them to permanently mutilate their bodies. We confuse them about gender and sex. We ignore them when they're murdered in the streets. We leave them trapped in failing schools. We teach them to identify as victims or as oppressors based on their skin color. It's madness. It's pathological. And it's intentional. So I don't think he was cruel or too harsh. In fact, I think we need more people like Matt Walsh who are not afraid to stand up and speak the unadulterated truth. Our kids depend on it. Psychological concept of the week false consensus bias. The false consensus bias or false consensus effect is defined as the tendency to assume that one's own opinions, beliefs, attributes, or behavior are more widely shared than is actually the case. It is often attributed to a desire to view one's thoughts and actions as appropriate, normal, and correct. There were a couple of experiments done in the 70s by Professor Lee Ross at Stanford, where a group of college students were asked to walk around campus for 30 minutes wearing a sign that said, "Eat at Joe's," and they were asked what percentage of other students would make the same decision that they did. The group who agreed to wear the sign predicted 62% would also wear it, and the group who refused predicted 67% would refuse. Both groups overestimated the percentage of students who would engage in the same behavior. There was another experiment done where students were given a scenario where there was some sort of conflict and given two options for how to respond, and then asked what option they think others would choose and what attributes they might apply to the person who chooses either option. And again, students predicted that mostly everyone else would agree with them, regardless of what option they chose, and they were likely to attribute some internal flaws to those who chose differently. That should sound familiar. So, this happens all the time, right? People tend to overestimate how much others share their views or behaviors or whatever it may be, particularly on contentious issues. And not always, but it's a tendency. And one of the clearest examples of this, I think, is the shock and awe of the 2016 presidential election, which saw President Trump get elected and left Democrats completely dumbfounded. They couldn't believe it. They thought it was going to be a landslide because how could anyone possibly support Trump for president? They couldn't imagine their views not being shared by the majority of Americans. So the response to that was that, well, we'd already decided that racists were going to vote for Trump. So this must mean that they're all racist. Everyone who voted for Trump is a racist. Racism is running rampant. It's all throughout our society now. Something is wrong with these people. They're a basket of deplorables. And never mind that many of these same people voted for Barack Obama. Nope, racism is the explanation. So this bias is driven by a desire to feel good and moral about your own decisions and behavior. It could also be driven by the availability heuristic, which we talked about last episode. If all you watch is MSNBC, or if all you watch is Fox News, you may have a skewed idea of how prevalent your perspectives and opinions are. So again, this is a tendency. It's not across the board, but it's something to be aware of. There's also an opposite effect that occurs when people underestimate how many others share their views and behavior. And this happens for similar reasons, like if people have limited contact with others who share their views, for example. And this is called false uniqueness. And it's also important to understand because we see that all the time, especially with these topics we're discussing. People are afraid to speak out against the madness occurring in our culture because they assume that they're alone. They assume that these beliefs and attitudes are far more prevalent than they actually are, and that far less people agree with them than what actually do. And that's why I get all kinds of messages from people saying that they wish they could say what I say, but they're afraid to speak out. And to be fair, that isn't unwarranted, because others who would privately agree with them will also be afraid to publicly defend them. So it becomes a feedback loop where the activists are loud and obnoxious and they bully everyone else into submission and sue them for not baking a cake. Anyway, the way to deal with false consensus bias or false uniqueness and any cognitive bias really is to be aware of it. Be aware of the limitations of your human brain. Be very careful about making assumptions. And also consider alternative perspectives. I mean, that's common sense. And find out why people believe differently than you do. And be as objective as possible. I mean, the tagline for this podcast is challenge the narrative. So I try to encourage people to do research and to be objective. Look at stats. Look at data. Prioritize truth over emotions. And prioritizing, as my favorite thinker, Thomas Sowell, likes to say, facts. All right. So this week, I have another video game I want to talk about. And listen, Zelda is probably my favorite video game series. And if you disagree, then you're wrong. So you're engaging in false consensus bias. Nobody else agrees with you. But no, I love Zelda. And it's up there with Final Fantasy. I think Final Fantasy is probably my favorite series, but I don't know. It's hard to choose. It depends. They're different. Anyway, Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild was an incredible game. Just a massive world to explore and a great story driving it and a lot of freedom to just, you know, kind of doing your own thing. And now the sequel called Tears of the Kingdom will be released in May of this year. And this is the description. It says, an epic adventure across the land and skies of Hyrule awaits in The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. The adventure is yours to create in a world fueled by your imagination. In this sequel to The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, you'll decide your own path through the sprawling landscapes of Hyrule and the mysterious islands floating in the vast skies above. Can you harness the powers of Link's new abilities to fight back against the malevolent forces that threaten the kingdom? Sweet. And the trailers that have been released look awesome. I mean, visually, it looks pretty identical to Breath of the Wild, which isn't a bad thing because the artwork is pretty incredible. So, and the major difference is we're, of course, spending a lot more time in the sky this game with the floating islands and whatnot. New monsters, new weapons, new abilities, apparently, according to the synopsis. But the main thing about Breath of the Wild was the open world and ability to explore pretty much everything and do whatever you wanted. That's what made the game pretty awesome. And I don't really mind linear games if the story is really good, but having the ability to explore and kind of do your own thing is what made that game work really well. And it sounds like Tears of the Kingdom is really going to hone in on that aspect of things, saying the adventure is yours in a world fueled by your imagination. So it sounds like they're really building off that. So, I mean, Ocarina of Time, I think, is still the best Zelda game to date. And that was Nintendo 64. And there have been quite a few Zelda games since then, which they've been good. But Ocarina of Time is still the greatest of all. It's the GOAT. And it's going to be hard to top that, I think. But we'll see. Because like I said, Breath of the Wild was still a great game. And hopefully Tears of the Kingdom lives up to the hype and continues that trend. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited to play it. All right. I'm not going to nerd out too much on this one. But Hogwarts Legacy will be out for PS4 in April. And Zelda Tears of the Kingdom will be out in May. So if I disappear for a while in the summer, you know what happened to me. All right, guys, let me know if there are any topics you'd like me to tackle in a future podcast. I'm always open to suggestions. Just shoot me an email at leonidas@leonidasjohnson.com. And make sure you pick up a copy of my new book, Raising Victims, The Pernicious Rise of Critical Race Theory, which is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Audible, anywhere you get books. I really appreciate you. Until next time, thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent. If you would like to support the show, you could do so through donorbox.org/Leonidas. That's donorbox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. Make sure you follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at leonidasjohnson.com. And I have a Substack now, which is just leonidas.substack.com. And as always, remember to do your own research, challenge everything, and don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next time. God bless.